Welcome. You're listening to FemWonk. I'm your host, Katie Davey, and I'm on a mission to raise the policy discussion around gender and inclusion. This week, we chat with Principal Amber Bishop about her fundraising efforts for the Cambridge Narrows Community School to continue their period project. Amber is incredibly passionate about ensuring that her school is inclusive both in its space and in the services that it provides to its students. We also talk a little bit about some of the policy interventions that could make these types of fundraising opportunities obsolete. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. Glass Sky is also one of our partners for this podcast, so thank you so much to Glass Sky for supporting both this podcast and also the project itself. Amber, thanks so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. I'll first just start by letting the audience know, of course, you're the principal of the Cambridge Narrows Community School, which is, I would say, a fairly rural school in New Brunswick. And one of the unique things I think about that school is that it is kindergarten all the way up to grade 12. So today I'd like to talk about, I guess, two programs that you've recently undertook as principal. One is the math education, and then the second one would be the period project. So I think they fit really well together. So maybe if you wouldn't mind just telling me a bit more about the math education and why that was so important to you and to your school.
Sure. Well, I've always had a problem with our older schools. If you check some of our newer schools out, you'll see there's a lot more color. There's a lot more, it's just more vibrant when you walk in. But our older schools, which is the majority of our schools, when you walk in, it's a very sterile environment. It kind of feels like you're walking into the emergency room or government building downtown, maybe, but it's just always been very cold, very beige. And I think, you know what, this is the place where kids spend the majority of the beginning of their lives, are in these buildings. And we teach children, even though they're 18 and they're in grade 12, they're still children. And so I thought, you know, I've always wanted to just make schools a warmer, brighter place as soon as you walk in. And so that was part of my plan while I was administrator at Cambridge Narrows. And so if you go into our classrooms, you'll see that all of our teachers have created very warm, very colorful spaces. They've, with their own money, because this is not paid for by, it's not comes out of my budget and it doesn't come out of the government budget, it comes out of the teacher's pocket. And they'll paint their room a different color. They'll put up beautiful visual aids, and our classrooms were really starting to look fantastic. And I had always wanted to do the bathrooms. I can't remember where I read it one time, but one time I read something that said you can understand the culture of a building by the way it treats the washrooms. And I thought, you know what, that's so true. When you go out to eat or when you're somewhere, if you're in you have to go to the washroom, and if it's a crummy, dirty washroom, you do kind of have a feeling for what the place is about. And so I wanted to make our bathrooms really welcoming. It's not so much the case for elementary students, but for middle school and high school students, when kids are upset, in particular girls, when they're upset, when they don't have anyone to eat lunch with, they'll often eat in the bathroom. When they want to cry, when they need to cry, or if they're an anxious child and they need to just go somewhere to release and be calm and be quiet, they'll go to the bathroom. If they are children who cut or children who are contemplating suicide, these things happen in the bathroom. Children, unfortunately, have committed suicides in bathrooms. And I just thought, you know what? I want our kids, when they go into the bathroom and they're upset about something or there's really something devastating weighing on their heart, I want them to walk into a room that's full of so much joy that it gives them just pause before they cut or before they cry or before they consider any type of self-harm. I wanted them to be surrounded by beautiful color and beautiful slogans. And so that's what we did. We started upstairs with the girls' bathroom, and I have a wonderful teacher who supplies in our building a lot, Elaine Erin Moss, and she comes in and she donated all of her time and some of her paints and her talent, and She painted the bathrooms upstairs in the girls' bathroom and the boys' bathroom. And then I have another teacher downstairs, Miss DeShano, and she took it on to do the kids' bathroom downstairs, K to five bathrooms. And they're just simple slogans. Anything from, you know, I think you're beautiful to be nice to your friend, you know, depending on the grade level that you're in. But they're fun and they're welcoming and they're warm and they're different. And that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I love that. And I've obviously, as you know, have had the chance to look at some of the photos. And what I've thought to be so amazing is, one, the slogans are very much empowering. But the one I also love, we talked a lot about some of the things that the girls face, but the one that stuck out to me actually was in the boys' bathroom, the one that in rainbow colors, stand up for what is right, even if you're standing alone. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the things we don't talk a lot about is empowering boys to think about masculinity in more of a broad way. That one really stuck out to me as, again, one of those ways to help empower boys who might be feeling, you know, the pressures of toxic masculinity, for example. So yeah, I think it's just been such a great, yeah, I love the photos. I've loved to hear about it. So yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm so excited for folks to see the pictures and hear this conversation.
Yeah, and it's important for us not to leave our guys out of the picture, because they have different struggles, right? Toxic masculinity is, as you know, as you've stated, it is vibrant in a high school setting, right? And we have to teach our boys what strength is without strength being something that's overpowering someone else. And so we definitely wanted to include our boys in that too. And there's a new education right now is moving more towards global competencies instead of outcomes that are in curricular documents. And if you were to sit down and look at the global competencies document, it talks so much more about community and how do you support your community and what do you do to problem solve and how do you think outside of the box and how are you strong? And it doesn't say specifically how are you strong, but that's the message that it has. So we're moving away from giving kids, you know, 75% in math for, you know, X, Y, and Z. And we're slowly going to move towards having kids learn and understand their own personal strengths and what they have to offer the community and the world around them, because that's really what we need in our environment right now. We need kids to be able to save us from where we've gotten ourselves, right? And so we're working towards that. And again, you know, again, if I were to think from the male perspective, if guys are who tend to get beat up or guys who throw a punch or whatever, it quite often starts in the bathroom. And again, if you've got positive slogans, I'm not saying that it's going to stop it or cure it, but it is my hope and my belief that it may hinder it. And then perhaps there could be some dialogue.
And oddly enough, the period project kind of got its start in the boys' bathroom. Tell me a little bit about that and kind of the first steps through to going into your second year running the program.
So the second year when I was at Cambridge Narrows, Horizon Health gave all the schools, all the high schools, they have to remember I'm a K to 12 school, but they gave all the high schools condom dispensers to be placed in the school in a place that was appropriate. So for some schools, they had an obvious place where they could put that, where it would be open to all high school students who would require to get their hands on condoms. However, because I am a K to 12 school, I couldn't put it somewhere out in the open. And so I needed to come up with a place to put it. And unfortunately, the only place that I could really come up with was putting it in the boys' bathroom. And a few of my girls last year who've graduated now promptly came down to my office and let me know that they didn't think that was very, very fair. It wasn't equal, and that they felt they should have access to the condom dispenser as well. And, you know, I was, as much as I was stressed because I thought, oh my gosh, where am I going to find the money to do this? I was doing such a happy dance because I had these young ladies going, you know what, it's not fair that the boys have access to these and we don't. Like, we need them too. So, you know, what are we going to do? Ask a boy to go get it for us. So I was just so proud of them. So then I started looking into it. And unfortunately, it wasn't something I could afford. So what I did at the time is I went and shopped and got a really beautiful, empowering box that just has beautiful slogans on it. And I put some condoms in it. And while I was doing that, I thought, well, my phys ed teacher at the time, Kelsey Tucker, had been given donations from the Always Project, where they were giving out sanitary napkins and deodorants, mini deodorant sticks for girls. So I went and I raided her stock in the gym locker room and put some in there. So the box became, it's what it started with, condoms, but then it became putting in sanitary napkins, tampons, deodorant, anything that I just felt that the girls would need. And I sat it on the counter, and surprisingly enough, not only did I have young girls come down to the office to say, "Hey, Miss Bishop, thanks so much. That was really great of you." I even had some parents from the community take time to send me an email, which is so nice to hear. Thank you from the community and from parents when you work with the kids, and just said, "You know what? My girls came home and they were so excited and they saw this, and that was great." And then that kind of inspired me to make sure the guys, I try to be as equal as I can. So I hunted around, and there was some, again, with a project that had, there had been deodorant that had been donated. And so I contacted some of the healthcare workers that work in the education system, and they had some deodorant left over. So I put that up in the boys' bathroom. And so that's how that all started. And then downstairs in my K-5, we have a little tiny basket, and in the basket, there are a few sanitary napkins, because we do have young girls who start menstruating earlier and earlier. And so I wanted them to have equal access as well. And again, they were so sweet and they were so excited, because for them, it's a big deal. If they were to begin their cycle at school, maybe they're too embarrassed to talk to somebody. Well, at least there's a product in the bathroom that if they need to, and they want to stay at school, they could get through the day if they wanted to until they got home to their parents. So I just really want my school to be as welcoming as possible for every child, regardless of what they're going through. And some girls, as you know, the data would show that when you're in a impoverished home, if you're choosing between feeding everybody or providing sanitary napkins, then you're going to pick feeding everybody. And so so data would tell us that 1 in 7 girls, I believe, misses school chronically because of their cycle. And I just don't want kids staying home for that reason, right? It's they can come to school, we can provide everything they want. We need to have our young people in school as much as possible. So I want to remove any barriers that I can. And that's a simple barrier for me to remove.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And not a lot of folks you know, would immediately think of providing menstrual products as just a natural kind of sanitary product in the same way that we provide, you know, soap and toilet paper in every washroom, right? For, you know, 50% of our population, sanitary products are part of their day-to-day, or I guess month-to-month is a better way of putting it. Life. So, I think that it's important that conversation is starting to come up. But yeah, as you said, you mentioned period poverty. I think it's really interesting that, you know, we live in a society in Canada and in New Brunswick more broadly, where there are lots of folks that can't access these things that we just all people have access to. I'd love if you would talk a little bit more as well about how you kind of came to that realization, I guess.
Well, my birthday was rolling around, and I didn't feel this was the year for parties and presents, and I just kind of wanted to do something simple and quiet. And the samples that we had received have all run out, and so I noticed that. Actually, my neighbor kind of inspired me. She had posted for her birthday that she wanted to buy a bed for the homeless shelter. So she had asked people to donate. And I thought, wow, what a simple, great, easy birthday present. And so then I thought, what could I do? And my head is always, what can I do for the kids at my school? And then I remembered we were out of the product, and we're a very small school with a very, very small budget. I mean, all schools are strapped for sure, but when you have a teeny tiny school, it's really easy to go through your budget fast. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm just going to see if I can gather funds together to buy sanitary napkins and tampons for the girls at school. And so I found a previously owned logo, hashtag my period project. And then I started digging in the research and the data, and I was kind of embarrassed that I hadn't come to the conclusion on my own, because I feed children every single day. I have some students in my building that I feed them lunch and breakfast. I have some children who come to me and will just say, Miss Bishop, you know, is there anything I can eat today, right? And that's every school has this. And we do our best to ensure that every child has food whenever they want, regardless of their social economic situation. We just provide food, and that's what we do. We provide food, and if you need it, you eat it. So it bothered me that I hadn't put two and two together and think that these young ladies who come and ask me for food probably also need these products. So I really wanted to keep the project going. So I threw it up on Facebook and asked people to donate. My goal was $500. And I was thrilled because so many of my friends were happy to give. You know, I asked everyone to pitch in $5, and the majority of my friends pitched in more than that. And that was so nice. And then Glass Sky came to the rescue, and not only did they meet my birthday expectation, but they doubled it. So they, the organization itself, with Robin Tingley. Robin and I went to school together, so we know each other from way, way back. We're not so much in touch anymore, but we knew each other when we were kids. And she jumped on the project right away. And so Glass Sky gave us $500 directly for the purchase of products. And then in addition, an additional $500 in goods in kind, where she's giving us beautiful books, and she's even taken part of the logo from the bathroom, and she's making it into these stickers. And so I'm going to put those in the girls' bathroom so that the girls can have them as well. So she's taken one of the slogans that Erin came up with for the bathroom door, and she's put it on a sticker. So it's about community, right? This is why we do what we do. And here I started out just asking friends to, you know, throw $5 or $10 into a pot so I could do this. And then along came Robin with, you know, and we know that her background is empowering women and helping young girls. And that's always been my passion as well. And so, you know, we joined forces, and then we dragged you into it. So it was three strong women working together to bring attention to period poverty. I think it's exciting.
Yeah, Robin has a very good way at dragging me into things, and I'm always very grateful for it. So I guess my big question, you know, you talk about first at the beginning of the project having the access to products from Always Donating, and then doing the fundraiser and Robin coming in. What role do you think, I guess, like I said, you know, we provide soap, we provide paper towel, we provide toilet paper, even your condom dispenser. What role do you think, the government broadly plays? Because we are seeing a movement, some, you know, municipal governments or even other levels of government putting, you know, access to these products in all of their own buildings. You're seeing like libraries getting some money for that as well. So I'd love to know your thoughts on, I guess, what that would look like. And if you think that that is something that is important to keep not only the project going at your school, but really all schools across the province and country for that matter.
So we've talked about this as principals and educators in general, knowing that schools are becoming more and more a spot where kids need they come to us for everything. If they need physiotherapy, they can get it at school through ISD programs. If they need mental health, they get it at school. If I've spoken about food, if they need nutrition, they get it at school. There are schools, my school included, we'll buy clothing for kids if we know that they need it. And so schools are becoming, have been for a very long time, but I just think it's growing. The concern and the needs are becoming greater. School is the place where you go to get, I think, everything that you need. It used to be reading, writing, and arithmetic, but it's not that anymore. It's a place from a lot of our kids. School is the safest place that they have in their life. And so the government at some point is going to have to figure out what their role specifically is in providing more for schools and for educators so that we can support the children who are our future. Right now, with the anxiety and depression crisis that we're seeing with our students, there has to be more put into our schools to support these children. Teachers are wonderful listeners and they love their children, but they're not mental health professionals. Same thing with administrators. We deal with it. We do the best we can. We refer them to people who have the expertise, but so much is being piled on the backs of teachers. A lot of these clothing items that I speak of get purchased by teachers. There'll be a teacher who will see that, you know, so-and-so doesn't have winter boots and they'll go out and buy them. A tremendous amount is placed on the back of the teacher. And I say that knowing full well that teachers do it because they love their craft and they are people who serve and they serve children. And so I've never heard a teacher complain about buying anything for anyone or doing anything for anyone. I've never heard a teacher complain, but it's getting to a point where, and it has been for years, where it's too much. And so the period project, for example, I do know that there are conversations that are happening with EECD, and they are working with our current Minister of Education to see if there are funds available. And I hope that comes to fruition. I believe it's a cost factor of like 5 cents a girl to supply sanitary products for them. So we're not talking about a tremendous amount of funds. But that's just one small part. Like it started with, I guess the big push started with breakfast. Everybody got breakfast. And some schools did it. I think now I'd be surprised if there wasn't a school who was doing it. We all feed students. I don't know how we always find the money for it. Sometimes it's donations, sometimes it's grants, but each school in New Brunswick, and I'm sure in other parts of the in the country, feeds children breakfast every day. Where are we coming up with that money? Like, schools shouldn't be fundraising to make money to feed kids, right? And then now we're looking at, you know, sanitary products and we have condoms by Horizon Health and things that are, they're coming. So there's more and more that is needed. And I think that we need to have a really healthy conversation around the table to see how can we support each other, because it can't be put on the backs of the administrators of the schools. It can't be put on the backs of the teachers. We can run those programs and we can see the need and we can bring voice to it and we can do everything we can, but the financial part can't be placed on that. And again, districts, it can't really be placed on districts. It has to come from, you know, the government. And I believe that we're in a, particularly now, I will say that I feel that our Minister of Education is very open and very forward-thinking when it comes to these projects. I've seen him at several events, really being wonderful with Outshine, which was the large national conference for LGBTQ kids. And I saw him there and I heard him speak with his heart. And I know he's about being inclusive. And inclusivity is not just our visible minorities or our LGBTQ kids, or being equitable and being fair is to make sure that we include every single child. And the period project is one of those ways to include every single child. So it's a lot. And I know I've kind of said a lot of random things on this, but what I see from looking at as administrator is seeing, wow, every single child in my building needs something. And I want to be able to give it to them, whether it's, you know, they just forgot their pencil, they need a hug, they need breakfast, they need a snowsuit, they need feminine products. I just want to make sure that I'm in a position that I can provide it for them. And if I can't provide it, at least I can put them in contact with somebody who has the expertise to help them with what they need. So I think it's a big conversation that we need to have around the table.
I like what you kind of said right at the beginning about how schools are becoming the one stop for students, essentially. Like, that is their safe place. That is where they go when they need anything. I think that's something so important when you talk just even about overall learning, right? Like, if a student comes to school, you know, I think we've all accepted the research that if a student comes to school without breakfast or lunch, it's going to dramatically impact their learning ability. But mm-hmm. I think, again, that can the same can be said for so many other factors. And you also mentioned, you know, 1 in 7 girls miss school because of their period. So I think it's, yeah, I like what you said about having just that overall broader conversation, because, you know, we've also heard, I think actually just last year, maybe the year before, a friend of mine's husband is a middle school teacher, and he put a call out for books. He teaches language arts, put a call out for books. And, you know, I kind of culled my shelf and donated the ones that I thought were, you know, appropriate for middle school kids. But it was, you know, yeah, like Twilight, Harry Potter, those kind of books. But sure, and I think we all, like, as a society, have accepted that teachers are paying for those types of things out of their pockets as well. But you're so right when you say it's all of these other factors as well. And it, I think, again, creates that equitable learning environment for all students when we're able to provide those supports.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So I won't keep you much longer, but I just love to give you the opportunity for any kind of final thoughts or, anything, wrap-up thoughts, anything like that.
I would just say to anyone who's listening, at any time, if there's something that you feel you can offer your local school, to just reach out. Administrators and teachers are always looking for help, and you may think that you have nothing to offer, but we are always looking for people to come in and talk with our kids, you know, so we feel like we're kind of like their parents. If they hear it from us all the time, they don't really listen to it, but if they hear it from somebody else, they get it. So if you have like my school, for instance, we have Feed the Husky program on our website, and you can donate money there to help our Feed a Husky program go. And I've heard about people who just set up an automatic withdrawal of $5 every time they get paid. And you know what? It's nobody really is going to miss $5 all that much. But if 10 or 15 people donated $5 every 2 weeks, I can feed a lot of kids that way. And I know there's other programs that are out there. Schools always have programs where you can help out. And there, I know there's lots of good causes, and we all find the cause that fills our bucket ourselves. But if you're someone out there looking at a way to get involved and a way to help the youth, I really encourage you to just check in with your local school and see if there's something that they need, whether it could be as simple as writing a check or it could be as simple as going in and giving a few hours of your time. We love to have you in there, and the kids love to have you in there. So the more the merrier. And like I said, Katie, I look forward to the day when we get to sit around the table and with all of our stakeholders and have these really important conversations and find a way to make education even better in New Brunswick, because it's awesome now. We do amazing things in New Brunswick. We have the highest level of educated teachers in the country in New Brunswick. We have, if you look at some of the stats where our kids are going from this little tiny rural province, kind of in the middle of nowhere, we've got kids doing amazing things all over the world. So the education system is vibrant in New Brunswick. The teachers are exceptional, and we've got some tweaking to do and some continued learning to do, but that's with every growing, thriving business. Education has changed from sitting in rows and reading in textbooks. It's changed. It looks completely different. And it's just getting more, it's an exciting time to be in education. There's more and more exciting change that's happening. anytime anyone wants to come in and talk or bounce some ideas around, the educators are always willing.
Amazing. And again, thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's, I think leading by example is so important. And one of the things I would say that folks could do if they're interested and inspired by this episode is even host their own kind of period drive in their workplace or wherever. And like you said, link up with a local school or a local library or something like that. And donate those products. I think that's, again, something that's so simple and would have a huge impact on their own local communities.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, there's all kinds of rules around nutrition, so people are always nervous to donate, but there's no rules around hygiene. So anytime someone wants to donate something, I'm sure the schools would be welcome.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, well, thank you again so much for chatting with me today, Amber.
You're welcome, Katie. It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. As always, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FemWonk. You can email me directly, katie@femwonk.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review. Thanks so much.